Hello and happy Monday, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to 98.3 FM, The Life. You're listening to Bacon Bits with Master Happiness. I'm your host, Marty Jalove, and every Monday at 7 p.m., we'll be chatting with business experts that will share their secrets of success. We'll be discussing the ups and downs, the kings and clowns, and the smiles and frowns at the office, on the job, in your career, for the businesses that you own, and everywhere in between. If you can't catch the live episode, tune into Bacon Bits with Master Happiness anywhere you listen to podcasts. So today is a very special episode. We're going to be starting a second set of 10 parts, and it's entitled Professional Growth. With me, I've got my son here, Nate. Say hello there, Nate. Are you on? Hold on 1 second. Try that one more time. Say hello again, Nate.
How's it going?
It's going well. You're loving the new studio?
Loving it. It's beautiful.
Isn't it beautiful?
Just so exciting.
Yeah, it's a whole new look. Let me get this. Let me get everything going here. This is perfect. So Nate, what we talked about a while ago, you said you're a manager at. You want to mention where you're working? How people can get a hold of you? Or you're like, no, I'd rather not. We're not going to say anything bad about the place. In fact, if anything, we're going to build it up.
No, I'm a dispatch supervisor at Cutzer Express. It's a trucking company out of Kenosha.
Okay.
And
how long have you been working there?
I've been there for 7 years.
Okay.
I started out as a driver and then slowly moved my way up to running the dispatch office.
Fantastic. So this is awesome. This is going to be, like I said, number one, part one of 10-part series about professional growth. Doing that whole idea of starting at a job, loving the job, something about it's pulling you in there, something about it is making you want to stay there, and seeing where your career is going to take you, as well as where the company is going to take you, and seeing what you can offer them and what they can offer you. All right.
Absolutely.
So this is going to be exciting. So today we're going to be talking about the riddle of responsibility. But before we get into that, I want to drive something home. I want you to think about this. I call it the 5 D's of your work career, the 5 D's. Okay. And it's really important to kind of understand these different spots that you're going to be in throughout your entire career. And the first D is duties. This is the type of maybe sometimes your first job somewhere. And what happens is you go there, they give you a list of duties or tasks, and they say, just do these by the end of the day, by the end of the week, etc. That's the job. You do those kind of things. You collect your paycheck and go home, right? This is sometimes the backbone of American industry. We need a lot of people who aren't asking questions, just doing their job. Okay. You've probably had positions like that sometime in your life, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's important to understand that there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's very important. It's essential to have people like that who are doing that all the time. All right. It's assembly line workers. I was talking to somebody, it's bus drivers. It's anyone who's running a route. There is a certain amount of just, these are the tasks we need you to do, fill in these spots, do this list, and we move forward, right?
Absolutely.
So that's the first D. That's the duties. The next D is what I call decisions. And this is the first time that in your career, what you do is whether it's upon yourself or the company leans on you and says it's time for you to make some decisions, where you're in charge of maybe determining some of your destiny or the company's destiny. So what you do is you say, well, I think we should go this way. I think we should go this way. And you're making these calls. And they could be really small things, okay? And sometimes making that leap from that first one to the second one is scary because nobody wants to make a mistake. Nobody wants to get fired over making a stupid decision. But if we don't make those decisions, sometimes we just sit there and we stare at our work going, well, it's not working the way I was told. And no one told me what I should do if it's not working, right?
Right.
So probably in previous jobs or somewhere in your life, you've probably seen people like that just look at the job and say, you told me to press X and then P and then do this. And then that's it. There's no P button. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I always... did I ever tell you the story? I don't know what just went there. I just muted on me for a second. So I ever tell you about a story in Lake Zurich where I live. It's pretty neat how the mayor is really big on this beautification project, right? And one day I'm driving by and I see these two guys on the side of the road. One guy's digging a hole, right? And he's going like 10 feet further, digging another hole in the little grass in front of the shops. The other guy who's following him is just putting the dirt right back in holes, right? Nothing more. And so I watched them for a while thinking I'm missing something. they're doing this over and over and over again. So I finally, you know, walk over to him. I go, I need to know what's going on. He's like, well, this is part of the mayor's beautification program. I'm like, yeah, I understand, but I don't get this. And he goes, well, see, I dig the holes. Larry plants the tree. And then Charlie puts the dirt back in, right? And I go, you're not putting any trees. Well, Larry didn't come into work today, so that doesn't stop us from doing our job. I had you believing that for a while.
For a second, you had.
All right, so those are the kind of guys who are just doing their duties, no decisions. They're not thinking about it, right? We don't necessarily want people like that making decisions either.
So
anyway, those guys are very important. The next people are, the next D is called the drivers. These are the people who take it upon themselves to motivate their employees, their peers. What they do is they see something, they're like, hey, as a team, we should win. You see this a lot in sports. That even though the players aren't the ones making the calls, they're part of a team and they want the team to win, so they inspire their team players. Now, if management looks and they say, wow, this guy's really good at inspiring his team and he's really, really good at making good decisions, then they move to the next D, which is a director position. This is when you're actually put in charge of a team. You have a responsibility for a group of people, okay? And this is where the decisions you make are much more important. All right, you've got to motivate and keep these people focused and keep working on it, okay? Now, that's the four Ds. The fifth D is a very special one, and that's the D for devotion. This is where you feel something about the company you work for. You feel something like it's part of you. It's what the company does is important, and you almost lose sleep over it. You worry about your team. You worry about making sure the things happen, not so much because how it's going to affect you, but how it's going to affect the company. So that's the devotion. So out of those five, I could go back into my life as a young entrepreneur, a worker, going into management, doing all types of levels, and see a point in my life through all of those where I'm a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but I definitely hit all five of those. So in your position right now, where do you think you are? I think I know where I'm gonna put you, but I want to hear you say it.
Well, for me, it's a tricky place to put myself.
Because sure.
All of the D's.
Yeah.
You know, as you said, they kind of build off of each other.
Yes.
And what I struggle with the most is the driver portion of it.
Is motivating your people?
Correct.
Okay.
So I've got, I have the decision making.
Sure.
I have the devotion. I know that, that a lot of what I do, and your daughter can attest to that. Just, I've spent a lot of time and commitment to this company.
Oh,
but
yes.
I have a team that I struggle with motivating and helping them to see the vision.
Gotcha.
That I have for the company. So okay. I would say, I skipped a step.
Okay.
In climbing up, and that is where I want to grow the most.
Right.
As a manager.
I was going to say, I was going to put you right in that devotion category, because I'm even surprised you're not looking at your phone right now. I mean, you're a guy who Christmas Eve, you were at our house and you're like, oh, sorry, I got to take this call. So you are connected to that company 24 hours a day.
Absolutely.
And so that's beautiful. And as a manager and as a business owner, I look at this and I know if I'm going to build a team to make me win, I want to find some people who are devoted to me. I want to find people who are going to say, I'm going to lose sleep over a decision that somebody made for the company. I'm thinking about what's best for the company. It's sometimes at our own detriment, right? We sometimes put the company before our own needs, all right? And as long as we're getting something out of it and we're feeling something and we're feeling like we're still being loved, cared for, needed, respected, trusted, then it's a good thing. All right. But what you never want to do is you never want to work for a company that you put that much into it and they just don't really care. Okay. Or they make you feel like you're important, and then you find out, what I've been doing, you're not even taking notice of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't want that. But as, like I say, as a manager and owner, I want a nice variety of all those peoples. All those peoples?
Yes.
All right. I need some people who are just going to do their job. I'm going to give you a list of stuff. Make sure you get this done and this done, and this done, et cetera. We're going to make sure that happens. And then I'm going to need people who are going to be motivated, inspiring other people. I need every single level there. Okay. So beyond that, like I said, we're talking about the riddles of responsibility, how we go through this. And you know, you've been on the show before, that what we do is we answer the big question. Everything is a little bit better when you apply a little bacon to it, right?
Yes, it is.
So today's no exception. So as a young manager and a young leader, these are five things I think you've got to think about. And what I'm going to do is we're going to talk about these, but I want to give the folks out there the five letters. And that's B stands for bravery. A is adaptability. C is clarity. O is ownership. And N is nurturing. Okay. And these are five things that I think any young manager needs to be able to grab onto. And really, well, the O is own these things and make sure that you can identify yourself with these traits, and your people should be able to identify you with these traits. Okay? So with that, the first thing is bravery. This is something where I'm going to say, you know, bravery is not, you know, or I should say fear is not the absence of courage. Okay? Fear is caring enough about making a decision that you want to make the right decision. You know, that fear of saying, I want to really make sure that the decisions I make, how they're going to affect the company, are the right decisions. I'm a little afraid of that, but I'm brave enough to still make the decisions. Okay. Can you think of something that you've done in the past where you're like, hey, I don't know, I'm not 100% this is the right call, but I've got to do this. I'm thinking in the right mindset. I'm thinking of the company, this is the direction I want to go in, that you would say you showed some bravery.
Yeah. I think, when I had first gone into the dispatch office, we were on a rotation of being on call. And so it's a lot of just responsibility that gets thrown at you. And initially our leadership was a little bit lacking. And so I remember it just being, I want to say it was like a Sunday night, and a driver called me and he was broke down. He was in the inner city part of Chicago making a delivery.
Wow. Okay.
And typically we would, like the standard protocols, we had a road service company that we would call, and then they would just outsource a mechanic to go fix the whatever the issue is with the tractors. But I'd been kind of paying attention to just what the cost had been, and I was been talking with our fleet maintenance manager. And I realized that it was actually cheaper for me to tow a new tractor trailer down to Chicago and bring the other one back than it would have been
really
the service company to come fix us.
Gotcha.
Sure. So I just made the judgment call, called the tow company, set up the tow,
yeah,
and was kind of like, well, let's see how this shakes out in the morning.
But yeah, because it was scary.
You know, and
yeah.
And at the end, like, and of course, the next morning rolled around and I had to, you know, answer the question of why did you tow the truck versus send the repair company?
Yeah.
And so I pulled up and talked about what the tow bill was versus what, you know, we were quoting to repair it. It was cheaper. And I was like, the problem was solved and we saved money. But in the moment, it was breaking protocol, but it was what I felt was right for the company.
That's cool. Right.
For the budget.
Yeah. I think that's important, is if a company can set some guidelines, and I always call them the core values of what's most important, how the company wants to be viewed. If the company can set up these core values of saying, this is what we stand for, and these are the things when you as a manager are making a decision, lean on these core values. These are the things we stand by. In other words, it might be expedience. It might be, you know, delivery first, making sure do whatever it takes to get the delivery done on time. Okay, if that's one of the core values, then sometimes that helps you make a decision. Because,
absolutely.
Because aside from just the dollar amount, aside from the cost, you can go to your boss, your supervisor, and saying, look, one of our core values is making sure that delivery gets done. Okay, and so because of that, I made the call to say, let's do all of this. Let me do this. And maybe it would even cost more, but you're saying, but that was the only way we could make the delivery on time.
Yes.
Okay. And so what you got to do is, and I would urge you, and maybe your company has already got it, is to try to create this list of core values, the things that you stand by, the things that would be your advertising slogans.
Right.
That you would say, this is who we are. This is why you call us. This is what we promise.
Yep.
Okay.
That's huge. And
yes.
For us, we do have one. It's not written down or anything, but I know from the owner and then our operations manager, we talk about it
good
on a daily basis.
Good.
all of the decisions that I make now as the supervisor, I base off of that category.
Perfect.
And it,
perfect.
It is crucial.
And it should be, and you know, you say it's not written down. That should be something up on a wall for every worker to see and say, this is our direction. You know, there's a difference. It's these three things. It's the core values you lay out. And these are these simple short terms or words that you live by, you live and die by. Then you have a mission statement, which defines what it is exactly that we do. And then a vision statement of where do we want to grow to? Where do we picture ourselves in 10 years or ultimately? Okay. And then all of those things, everyone makes a decision based on it. Whenever you're confused, you look at those that list and you say, this fits in that list. Okay, this is the direction I'm gonna go. So you don't get clouded by, oh my God, this is gonna cost us so much money. Yeah, but if we don't do this, we will miss this delivery and that will turn into a bad review, or it will turn into a regular case that then we'll get used to being late. And you never want that to happen.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's really cool. I remember I was going to say about, as far as going back to bravery, starting out the very first time I ever had to run a crew, that I got moved up, and I was a phone solicitor. Everyone loves phone solicitors.
They are your favorite.
They are, right. And I had a group of about 20 people, and I was one of them, and they asked me to run the department. And that was interesting because I was just one of them. And then had to suddenly stand up in front of them and tell them what to do. And you had some people going, who are you to tell me what to do? You know, I already know what to do. I've been doing this longer than you. I do it differently than you. And I had to step up. And there was a few of those times where you had to kind of like walk away and say, take a deep breath and go, do I really know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Say, yeah. Am I, you know, I can, it's easy to say it, but can I really walk the walk?
Yep.
And when you start working with people in a crowd, sometimes it's difficult. That's that first step. You say to all of them, this is who I am now. I'm not going to change anything dramatic, but we are going to start moving in a different direction. But then you've got to have the one-on-ones with people, because that's where you start finding your true allies and the people who are going to go, yeah, I'm going to follow you. What do you know? Tell me, just prove to me that what you're doing is right and it's working, and I'll follow you through fire. And you find those people. And then together you start working on those fringe people who are like, oh, I'm not exactly sure. And then sometimes you've got a few people who work for you who will say, I don't care who you are, I'm never going to listen to you. Those are the tough ones.
Yeah.
And those are the ones you unfortunately have to go to the people above you and saying, you know, looking towards a mentor and saying, how should I handle this? What should I be saying to this person? How do we do this? How do we, you know, because there's a toss up between somebody who's really good at their job, but if they can't listen to management, if they can't take orders, they start a precedent for other people to follow.
Right.
Okay. So it's really important to do that. So it's tough for a young manager to walk up in front of a group of people, especially if you came from the ranks, and then you get people going, oh yeah, we're old buddies, so you're going to let me slip. And you're like, no, I cannot let you slip.
Yeah, that was definitely a challenge my first couple of years.
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, going from being one of the boys to now you have to listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some people who say if you want to be successful, never be friends with anyone you work for, which is in some sense you say, well, that makes a little bit of sense. It's in some ways it's logical, but the flip side is we're human. We spend a lot of time with these people. You know, you want to be, you want to build a rapport with them to be, make a connection with them.
Yes.
But you can't be like another good old boy with them.
Right? You have to have those boundary lines very clearly established. And I had a couple of situations I got myself in a predicament because, you know, I didn't have the lines established. And that was a big eye opener for me starting out going, okay, we can't have this situation happen again. We cannot, you know, be at this level of familiarity, because then when it's actually time to, you know, act on something or, you know, make a decision,
and then
it's going to cloud your judgment, or it's, you know, people are going to not listen to what you have to say.
Well, yeah, because what happens is, even if it never clouds your judgment, even if you're making strict decisions, people can use it against you, where you're like, well, you let this guy do everything he wants because you're friends. You know, you don't do this, and it really makes the job so much more difficult.
It does.
And it's sad that it has to seem that way. It has to happen like that. But, you know, if you want to be successful, you've got to think of, unfortunately, you've got to think of yourself, your family, before you think of your relationships with the with these people.
Absolutely.
You know, right. All right. So that's cool. So I would consider you a brave person. So the B, we're going to put a gold star next to that for you.
I appreciate that.
All right. All right. So the next letter is A, is adaptability. All right. This is a really essential tool because, like, you know, trucks are on the road, right? And you've got to adapt to situations. You might say, hey, this is the shortest route. And all of a sudden the guy calls you and says, this road is under construction.
Yep.
Okay. There's a car accident here. You know, all I can do is cut through an alley. And you're like, no, 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 don't cut through the alley. You know, there's all kinds of things like that. So how are, do you consider yourself fairly adaptable? And then how? Like, how did you become adaptable?
I have always considered myself adaptable. I think one of my strengths but also shortfalls is I am a very in-the-moment person. So I will be, I'll be looking ahead, but most of the time I am in the, you know, the next hour to hour and a half when it comes to just the way we run a lot of our operation.
Okay.
So, I mean, a perfect example is it was end of day today, and my planner and I were going through reviewing all of our trucks for tomorrow, and I got a phone call that we had a driver breakdown and the delivery wasn't going to be made today.
Oh, okay.
And so it just, you know, in a matter of minutes, I called in one of our guys who was a part-time guy who was off, brought him in, assigned him to one of the routes, shuffled like 3-4 drivers around, redispatched everybody, and then just, you know, like we didn't even miss a beat. I think it took maybe 10 minutes to go from, you know, what would have been a missed delivery and possibly, you know, a bad review from the customer to being able to just reassign everyone and keep it moving. And that is something that I really enjoy. It makes the day interesting. I like when a challenge will pop up and I have to go, okay, we had everything laid out.
Right.
Now we got to change it. And I have something I say in the office, and I know it drives everyone around me nuts, but it's I always say it's better to be lucky than good.
Okay.
Because I say, and it's a mindset. I say to them, you can have the perfect day planned out.
Right.
You can have 97 drivers on the road. Everybody's going, has their front haul, their back haul, everything laid out perfectly. And one little hiccup is going to throw out your day.
Yes.
But if you focus on laying everything out and then something that you thought maybe wasn't going to work, but you took a chance on it, works.
Yep.
And like the ability to kind of push the envelope or make a last minute change or be constantly looking, you know, don't be so set that this is the plan and this is going to work.
Right.
You got to be able to just fly by the seat of your pants a little bit.
Sometimes.
And when it works, it is the best feeling.
Well, I think I'm going to go along with you on this. I'm agreeing with you 100% that if we didn't get these hiccups, if we didn't get these problems that we have to overcome, what happens is we get really mundane with our job. You know, then it's the same thing over and over again, and we never get to practice when a problem really does pop up. And then when a small problem pops up, suddenly it's a crisis.
Right.
So I'm with you. I would rather be in a job where I've got to make quick decisions all day long, all right, as opposed to something that I'm like, all right, everything's running smoothly, and so all of a sudden it's like somebody goes, hey, this is the problem. And you're like, we're not prepared for this.
Right.
Okay. I really think that this is something else. Have you guys ever done this? And that is like a crisis preparation. Okay. So what you end up doing is you get the drivers in, and what you do is you brainstorm what are the worst case scenarios. So this happens or this happens. Somebody hits the truck. Somebody comes out, starts screaming at you. You know, whatever. You come up with all these terrible worst case scenarios and then discuss as a group, how do you handle those? And it's a really good idea because what happens is then as a group, it's a group think. And you go, well, that did happen to me once. This is what I did. And then you're like, whoa, no, we don't want to do that. Instead, let's do this. Because then you're preparing everyone ahead of time for some of the worst case scenarios. You're never going to cover everything.
Right.
But what happens is then it's the cooler heads prevail because then people are like, yep, you know, we just talked about this. So what I'm supposed to do is calm down. Hold on 1 second. Let me call my dispatcher or something like that, as opposed to start, arguing with someone.
Right.
All right. And so it's a good thing for all companies to do this, is to work with, especially people who have a direct connection with customers.
Right.
Okay. So that's salespeople. It might be delivery people, customer service, etc. to practice worst case scenarios. What happens when this happens? I mean, what happens when you get there and they go, this isn't our shipment. What are you talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the driver's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Look, I'm just supposed to drop it off here. You don't know. Instead, what's the protocol? What's the way to handle that? And that's a good thing to practice, especially if you're hiring newer people.
Right.
You know, they've never run into it.
Right.
Yeah. And it makes some of the older, the existing people feel important because you're asking their opinions.
Right. They're passing that wisdom down to the younger generation.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's big.
Yeah. So you can institute that. We'll call it the Marty method.
Making a note of it. All right.
There you go. All right. Yeah, I see you scratching over there, scratching down some notes. Awesome. You know what? We're going to take a quick break, if you don't mind there, Nate.
Oh, I mean, I do, but here we go.
All right. We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. And we are back. Thank you all so very much. You're tuned in to 98.3 FM, The Life. You're listening to Bacon Bits with Master Happiness. I'm your host, Marty Jalev. We're going to be talking business here, and my guest today is Nate. And today, what we're doing is talking about that professional growth. This is part one of a 10-part series for young professionals trying to see if they want to grab a position in management, in directing people, how they want to grow, what the company is offering them, what they can offer the company. So it's going to be a wide variety of things. Make sure that you tune in. Check us out on the podcast, Bacon Bits with Master Happiness, to learn more about the 10-part series. And tune in every week here for the live episode, where we're going to have a lot of great business experts talking about all kinds of cool stuff. So, Nate, what we've been talking about so far has been these steps, the bacon of the riddle of responsibility. So B was for bravery, A is adaptability, and we both talked about that in quite a bit. C is going to be clarity. This is another one of these really important things to understand if you're going to be a young manager growing up, is being clear with your communication. Now, I have given a number of different speeches, and it's really interesting that clarity is one of the things I say that speakers have to get so much better at. It's really easy to say, well, I told you that, but we have to make sure that we check with them to make sure that our people heard what we're saying. Because sometimes when we speak in assumptions, and we say, hey, do this, right? You got that? And the guy gives us the thumbs up. It's sometimes, if it's crucial, tell them to repeat it back to you. And it could be, repeat it back to me, write it down, send me an email that these are the steps you're going to do, anything that it takes to get it done, so that you can really make sure that the information or the ask that you're giving is really understood. Because there's nothing worse than saying, here's this big project, I told you what we need. 6 months later, you know, you come back and go, what is this? Well, this is what you asked for. No, this is nothing like what I've asked for. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
So how do you clarify? How would you consider yourself, a king of clarity?
Oh, that's a great question. It is definitely a area that I am growing in. Like you said, a big one is just asking them to repeat it back. Or even sometimes I found I'm in the process of training a new dispatcher.
Okay.
So it's just maybe giving them a task, but then without seeming like you're micromanaging, just kind of paying attention to what they're doing.
Right, right.
And I'm just trying to learn, okay, like I'll try different things. Like I'll either explain something a certain way and I'll see, and I will look, and if I see like they didn't get it, then I go, okay. So that is not,
sure.
That's not like they're learning, you know, it's figuring out the way the person that you're talking to listens.
Wow.
Because
that's strong. Yeah.
You know, there's some people that you could tell them something and I'll, you know, watch them write it down in a notebook and they go, got it. And
yeah.
3 days later, they're asking you the same question.
Right.
And you go,
right.
It's in your notebook.
Yeah.
And they might have that written 10 times in their notebook, but they're not going to reference that notebook. So that notebook is useless. So how do you get them to comprehend what you're saying or make a note of it? And if you know they're taking a note and the note doesn't work, you have to find a different way.
Well, what's worse is the way I take notes. I go back later and go, I can't even read my handwriting.
Right.
You know,
right.
that's really tough. So one of the secrets I really truly believe is, and I know this is going to sound tough, but I'm going to give you the answer before you ask the question, is I'll tell them, hey, these are the things I need you to do, these five things. And I'll say, I need you to repeat them back to me so that I know you understand it. It's not because I don't think you can understand. It's because I want to make sure I am being clear with the messages. I don't want to come back later and realize I forgot to give you one vital step. Okay, so in other words, you're taking the responsibility of miscommunication. You're owning it.
Right.
And you're saying, so I'm gonna tell you these things. So there's always three things that I say before a manager gives a subordinate, one of his team players, a responsibility. And the responsibilities are usually, this is the task I need done by this time, you know, and there's a deadline, right?
Right.
So what you end up doing is you say, ask yourself these three questions. Did I articulate myself properly? Did I explain all the steps, all the things, exactly what I need? Did I explain what success looks like? That's number one. Number two, did I ask them to repeat it back to me so that I know that they truly heard what I said and they understand what success looks like? They have to understand what success looks like and what failure looks like, right? And then three is, did I question myself about the task I'm giving them? Is it something that's possible? Because sometimes in our head, we come up with something, we go, hey, you should be able to do this in an hour. And they come back 4 hours later going, I'm not done. And you're like, what? It would have taken me an hour. Then when you go and get your hands dirty, you're like, oh man, this takes me 8 hours to do. I didn't think. Because sometimes we can't comprehend how long a task really takes. So make sure I'm being clear with them, make sure that they understand by repeating it back, and making sure that, you know, your task or your ask is in the realm of reality.
I think a big thing to note, just because as you were running through this, I started, you know, my mind's going 100 miles an hour.
Sure.
And I was like, well, how do you ask them to repeat it back to you without seeming condescending?
Yes.
You know, because you don't want them to feel like you're like, you get it? Yeah. You get what I'm saying?
Now say it. Now say it to me.
Right. So communicating to them that you want to repeat it back to make sure you didn't miss anything
exactly. In
communication to them, I think is key. And
that's it.
And being able to do it in a, you know, in a conversation as opposed to, you need to do this. Now tell me what I said, you know,
right,
for you to
right.
do.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important piece to that.
Correct. You drive it home like you're a team.
Right.
And I just want to make sure that I'm giving you the right information.
Right.
Because I don't want it to be when we're done, all of a sudden what happens is, you know, we don't get the job accomplished, and I don't know. Now I don't know if you messed up or I messed up by not giving you the right responsibilities, yeah. our goals, etc. Yeah.
And that can be just a frustrating piece. I mean, I know
there's
been a Friday evening where I've looked over something and I'm like, I went over this Thursday at 10 a.m. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's sitting back and going, how can I explain it differently to make sure this doesn't happen going forward?
And I'll tell you, as a company coach, it happens all the time that I sit there and I hear somebody give someone else some ideas, some rules, and saying, I need you to do this, 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 and this. And then I come back a week later and then they're there going, ah, that person didn't do that, right? And we're in a meeting, the three of us, and the person's like, well, I did. This is what you told me. And the person, it's not what I, you know, the manager's, that's not what I said. And then I have to cut in going, yeah, you know what? The sad part is that's exactly what you said,
right.
You know? And it's because we live in a world of assumptions and we see a picture, but we can't describe everything that's in our minds sometimes. So that's why it's so important to get them to respond back to you. Okay, this reminds me of when I worked for this small company and I first got put in charge of research and development.
Okay.
Okay, and my whole idea was, I was a visionary. I was coming up with ideas all the time, but never did the hands-on stuff. You know, I could build stuff out of wood, I could fold paper, but not worked with sheet metal and machining parts, right?
Right.
So suddenly I get put involved and they told me, hey, you're in charge of this shop and there's three main guys. So I go there and I'm talking to them and I swear it sounds like it's a joke, but it's completely legitimate. And there was a Mexican-American, great guy, Esteban, a Polish-American, great guy, Valdik, and then the third guy, African-American from Mississippi, Levon. And the three of them, they work so well together, right? And so I introduce myself. I go, look, guys, you know so much more about this. I'm going to feed you ideas. I want to learn your systems, what you do. Tell me what's slowing you down, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. And they all look at me. And Valdik, the Polish guy, says, I got a joke for you. And he tells me this joke. But I couldn't understand him because of his accent, right? And I'm staring at him. And the other two are laughing. So Esteban then goes, let me tell you. And he repeats it. He's got a really strong accent. And I'm staring at him going, oh my God, I don't understand this. And Levon's the last guy laughing, a really strong Southern accent. He goes, oh, ignore these guys, Marty. I got you. And he tells it again. And I'm like, I looked and I go, I have no idea what any of you are saying. This is our first thing we're going to work
right,
on.
Yeah.
And I leave, and as I'm walking away, the three of them are cracking up. And to this day, I don't know if they did it on purpose, which if they did it on purpose, congratulations to them. But I just really, over time, I just learned to communicate with them and understand them to the point where I never saw or never heard an accent again. They didn't change. No, they didn't change. They didn't change the way they spoke. I just changed the way I listened to them. Okay.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you? Yeah. And so that's what was so important. It was really something. And that to me is this clarity thing is aside from just understanding, you know, when I'm speaking to you and, you know, that's one thing for me to get a message across to you. But then there are cultural boundaries. There are accents. There are language boundaries. There are all so many things that interrupt communication that we as managers have to overcome.
Yeah.
And we have to empathize with people when we're communicating with them because the most important thing is really making sure that they hear what we're saying.
Yeah.
So that was a fun time.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Because I love a good joke. I really, to this day, wish I knew what that joke
was. No, the language piece is huge because there'll be a couple of times somebody on my team will pick up the phone and will be like, I have no idea, you know, what they're saying. And, because we have drivers with multiple cultural backgrounds.
Sure,
but,
sure.
You know, I make a point to try to pick up what they're saying because communication is so crucial in what we do.
Yes.
And it's, you know, encouraging them to be like, oh, well, just slow down or have them repeat it. Don't be condescending.
Right,
you know, don't get frustrated with them when you don't understand what they're saying. Listen to what they're actually saying, and you can get a lot more accomplished than getting frustrated about the barrier.
And I think that's the whole thing, is that understanding that frustration is a two-way street.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And you as the manager, you know, we have to then say, we have to be the coolest. We have to be, all right, I'm just going to relax. I'm going to take it. I'm going to try to understand you a little bit more. And sometimes, you know, what I started doing was drawing a lot of pictures.
Okay.
Right. You know, just saying, so is this what we're talking about? This is what I'd like to do. How would you do this? And over time, the more you were drawing pictures and looking at it and then them showing me, and we'd pick up things and hold things and saying, look, this is how these things go together. You know, it almost seems like we were speaking completely different languages. And in a way we were.
Yeah.
Okay. Because aside from, you got to keep in mind, aside from them speaking different accents, they were speaking from a machine shop standpoint.
Right.
Where I had no expertise. So they were speaking with terminology that I didn't understand. So over time, we became such a great team. We ended up, we got at least two patents out of that, plus so many cool, really, really cool inventions. They were just a really strong team. Great, brilliant, brilliant guys. Yeah, so I loved the fact that I had the opportunity to work with them and lead them. And and that was not anything that it was tough for me to ever tell them, hey, that's wrong, we're not doing it that way, we're gonna do it this way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
All right. So, so far we've done now BAC. C was for clarity. O is this, and this is ownership. And this is the one that really sets great managers aside. This is the one that shows your team that you're going to step up, that you've got their back. Okay. I'm a strong believer in the idea of I praise in public and I reprimand in private. Okay, I praise in public and reprimand in private. I never cut someone down. I never tell them what they're doing wrong in front of other people. What we do is we concentrate on the people who are doing wonderful things, and we talk about these things and saying, hey, I'm really proud of you. You know, John did this, this, and this. Everyone, let's give him a round of applause. This was fantastic. I love how you took the initiative and you scored a touchdown, whatever. But then you pull people aside and you're saying, hey, you know, is there a problem here? This is what's going on. You know, I saw these issues and these issues are repeating. Those are the conversations you have in private.
Right.
And what you end up doing also is you show them that, remember, you're the leader of a team. So when management comes in and goes, what happened? You have to say, I failed. This is my team. I'm taking responsibility for my team.
And that's huge.
Yeah. Because a lot of people want to go, that was Larry. Larry screwed up. I had nothing to do with that. And if I had a leader like that, I would never follow that leader.
Right.
You know, so that ownership, saying I don't just, I don't own the jobs because you guys are all doing parts of it. So you own that, but I'm going to own the success of the team and I'm going to take that responsibility.
Now here's a question I have.
Go ahead.
Just along with that.
Yeah.
So where does that level of ownership kind of stop? So, for example, if let's just say it's a public setting,
sure,
and you know, my upper echelon of management is asking me, is questioning me on something, and it's in front of the entire office that I oversee. Yep. And, you know, in that moment, I feel like I have to say, hey, we made a mistake here. Yep. We're going to address and all that. But there also has to be a level of, if there is something that is consistently a problem, where I lay out a game plan, I say, this is the vision, this is the guidelines we need to follow, and someone is directly not following that, and uh-huh. we are failing because of that.
Yeah.
Where, like, when is the right time, or how do I go about,
I would
then go into the upper management right. and saying, hey, look, back there, you know, it was all five united,
yeah.
but I need you to understand this is an area that we're struggling. They're not listening.
That's exactly what I would do. Just what you said. When the management comes in and says, looks at the team and says, what's going on here? You guys failed. You know, I set these goals and you guys are nowhere close to it. You step up in front of them and you say, you know what? I got to take this responsibility. This is my team. I was the one who made you the promise. Okay. This team is working for me. They're working really hard. We're trying everything like this, and we missed that one. Okay. It's my responsibility. I'd like an opportunity to talk to you. Okay. And that's what you do, because you need to show the team that you've got them.
Right.
Okay. And then when you do is you walk into management. All right. And you sit there quietly, and you have to understand that one of your jobs is making sure these people are doing their jobs.
Right.
Okay. And so if you got to come to them and saying, Larry, okay, I don't know, I hope there's no one named Larry working.
No, Larry's working.
Larry's like going, yeah. What the hell? Why always me? But anyway, you come in and you say, so look, here's I'm having a problem with Larry. He's not listening to me. He's not following through on this kind of stuff. I'm trying. I've done this. I've done this. I've done this. Okay. What management doesn't want to find out is this is an ongoing problem for months and months and months, and you've never come to them with the problem.
Okay.
Okay. So what you have to do is just to say, you come and saying, look here, I just want to fill you in. You don't need to do anything. I'm having a problem with Larry. This is what I did. This is how I handled it. This is what I told him he should do. I'm going to check back with him in a couple weeks, in 30 days, whatever, and see where he's at. I'll keep you informed, but I don't need you to step in just yet.
Right.
30 days comes, Larry's still screwing up. Okay. Then you go to management and you say, look, I need some guidance here. I need some mentorship. What should I be doing here? I went to Larry, explained to him what was wrong. I put it in writing to him and saying, look, these are the things we need to do. I told him I would check back in 30 days. 30 days later, he's still screwing up. What would you want me to do? And those are the conversations that you are having with your managers, because that's the exact same kind of conversations you would want your people to have with you.
Right.
You want them to come to you and saying, hey, Nate, I'm having this problem with this delivery. Every time I drop off something, the customer keeps me there too long. They want to yak to me, and I'm trying to get out of here. What should I do? Here's what I would do. They'd say, I tried that. Okay. They try to solve the problem themselves, and then they keep you informed,
because right.
you don't want to find out about it too late.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And so don't be afraid of it, but because think about it. If you go to your manager and you say, and they go, yeah, Nate, you've been missing every target for the past year. Well, it's not my fault. It's Larry's fault. They're going to go,
yeah.
So it took you a year to tell me that? Okay. Yeah. Why didn't we get rid of Larry a year ago?
That's when it becomes excuses instead of a reason.
Exactly. Right. That's it. Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's okay. Taking ownership of the team does not mean dying on the sword.
Okay.
Okay. Right. You have a job to do. And if your team players can't be successful team players, then you've got to get rid of them. They've got to move. You've got to find a way to help them evolve and grow and change. Okay. And sometimes what you need to do is you need mentors, you need coaches in your life. You need to go to your upper management. The job that changed my life was I worked for a guy, and the president, his name was Al, and he was the greatest mentor I have ever had in my life. And he was the guy who came in, checked with me all the time. How are things going? And he'd just say, what can I do to make your job better? What can I do to make your job easier? Okay. And it was always that. And I had no problem telling him, I'm stuck on this. I can't get past this. I don't know how to fix this problem. I've been doing this, 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 and this. Or he'd say, what have you done so far? And so that's what's important. Those are the types of leaders. That's the guy that I would run through fire for.
Right.
Because he was there. He always made me feel like he had my back. So that's the kind of leader you want to be. And hopefully your leaders, the people above you, are the same way. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So that's ownership. let me see. The next one I'm going to bring up is N, which is nurturing. And this is what you end up doing with your team. You help them grow. All right. Just like you're growing and you're evolving into a better version of yourself, you got to ask them, what can I do to help you become a better version of yourself?
Right.
What can you, what are your aspirations? What do you want to do? Okay. If some guys are like, look, all I want to do is do my route and go home. That's cool. Excellent. Now I know that, and that'll be fine. But someone else goes, I want to learn more. I want to maybe become a dispatcher. I want to do something like that. What you have to do is you have to nurture them. You have to say, these are the things you need to do. These are the things I need you to prove to me before I recommend you for that.
Right.
And you move forward like that. Okay. So that's nurturing. This is finding what's going to be called like that untapped potential in those people. I go out of my way all the time trying to read books, just picking up tips left and right all the time. So how are you learning? How are you growing? How are you evolving? I'm going to throw it right at you.
Right.
Here, I'm going to switch the camera. So now you're on the camera.
That's perfect.
How are you growing,
yeah,
baby?
Love that.
All right.
Part of the way that I'm trying to grow is by being on the show.
Nice.
Just kind of picking your brain and going through and talking with us. Just trying to talk to my upper management. I read our COO recommended a book to me.
Okay.
Titled The Winner Within.
Okay. That sounds like a good book.
Oh, Pat Riley, I believe.
Okay.
And it's written from his standpoint as coach of the Lakers, but
gotcha.
He had a lot of good tips. And it was actually funny because in reading the book, I'm not a big basketball guy.
Yeah.
But he tied a lot in with business.
Yeah.
Actually inspired me just in dealing with my team and
there you go.
Kind of helping build what's tricky though is you'll read something in a book or I'll sit and I'll have a conversation with you and I go, well, that's really great. And then it's noon on a Tuesday and I've got you know everything swirling around and the frustration starts coming in and it's easy to sit there and look at your team around you and just be frustrated or not nurture them.
Right.
And then like I'll have a vision in my head of what I want. And so it's translating it and then building it and also just making them feel valid and like their opinion counts.
Gotcha.
And it's like I have a very talented team that I'm in charge of. There's four of them.
Okay.
And every day they impress me.
Fantastic.
Just with
that's
their,
excellent.
With their knowledge.
That's,
I mean, that's
great that you just say that live on the radio.
And there's some that have been doing it for 20 years. There's some that have been doing it for 3 or 4 months. But they all have their own unique ideas.
Right.
And for me, a lot of helping nurture is just slowing down and listening.
Yep.
I had one guy and I put him on the spot because I thought I had him on something. And
yeah.
I was like, what's your plan to, recover all these trailers?
Yeah.
And he laid out this whole detailed plan. He's like, actually, I've been doing this for like 5 days now. And I've gotten the trailer pool from 17
down to
10. And I was like, I think I almost was embarrassing him because I was like, that is such a good idea. I was like, I would have never even thought of that.
That's beautiful.
And I see him executing it and all that. And it wasn't even, I wasn't even watching over his shoulder going, you should do this. And so I was,
right.
He was just proud of the growth that I'd seen in him coming
That's
up
tremendous.
With that. I was like, this good is job. Incredible.
That's excellent. So one of the things I want you to do is think about this. And I've mentioned it and you've probably heard me say it is this idea of shine, sharpen and share. Okay. And I try to do this every night and you should do this on your ride home from work. And so it is, you ask yourself, how did I shine? In other words, I have talents and abilities. There are things that are good about me that's why I got this position.
Right.
I'm not just some bum. There are things that I do really good. All right. So just remind myself and what did I do those things today? Next is sharpen. How did I sharpen my skills? How did I get better at my job every single day? What did I learn? Did I learn from a mistake? Did I learn from a win? Whatever it is. And then lastly, how did I share it? In other words, what good is it to have those talents within you if you're not passing those along to your team?
Yeah.
So look at those kinds of things and ask yourself all the time, how did I shine today? How did I sharpen my skills? And then finally, how did I share them with my team? And doing that, I think you're going to be a big winner. Okay. I'm looking at the clock here. We rambled on quite a bit, so we're almost out of time, but this is cool. We got through the bacon, which was for young managers, really important to be brave, adaptable, be very clear with your communication, own your role, and be nurturing with your people. All right. Any closing thoughts you want to throw in there, Nate? Okay.
Nothing.
No, you've given us a lot, and I've really, really enjoyed this. I found this, and I love the sound of this. Remember, leadership is not a title, okay? This is what's important. Leadership is not a title. It's a commitment, it's an adventure, and it's ultimately a legacy, okay? Because I know that every great leader has to be in a position where if I leave the job, the place should still run without me.
Absolutely.
If a place falls apart without me, that means I did not set the company up for success. I set myself up for success. So it's really important to remember that your position as a manager or a leader is a legacy that your team should carry on.
That is a huge mindset.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, because most of us think solely about ourselves, right?
Right.
Yeah, and we don't want to do that. So excellent. Again, thank you so very much, Nate. Thanks for coming on. And this is part one of, like I said, a 10-part series. So we're going to go through a bunch of stuff here.
I'm excited. Nine more to go. Yeah, maybe some more.
Yeah, exactly. So we're gonna touch on all kinds of other really cool stories. We're going to share some stories. We're going to think of things, the successes and failures, whether they be on the job or even in our real life and how it affected our job. Because there's all kinds of things that happen in our real life, let's put it this way, that affect us at work, right?
Yeah.
All right. So with that, thank you again, everyone listening. This has been, this is 98.3 FM, The Life, coming from our new studio. You're listening to Bacon Bits with Master Happiness. I'm your host, Marty Jalove. If you want to hear this episode again later this week, it'll be on the podcast, which is Bacon Bits with Master Happiness, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Again, thank you all so very much for tuning in. Tune in next week. Bye-bye.